try to think about that. I have a little bit of a hard time thinking about that at those times when a lot of good things are not happening in my life. There have been a handful of times when things have not gone well in my life. Perhaps I'm not the only one in the room who've experienced those kinds of things. The truth of the matter is there may be some of you in this room right now who feel like there are a whole lot more bad things that have happened in your life than good. I hope not. But certainly, some of the kinds of things that we've had to deal with in our lives have really challenged us. And we begin to question ourselves, perhaps, the justness and rightness even of this world and the fairness that we either experience or don't experience. And sometimes even question God, for handing us the set of circumstances as if he's out there like he's got a deck of cards and he's just been dealing these things out. Oh, man, I drew a such and such. I don't think that's exactly the way the Lord is working. But regardless of how we end up in the circumstances we're in, we really only have two choices. And that is we can either try to experience those things in ways that are wholesome, good, honorable, and ultimately bring glory and honor to the name of God, benefit others. Or we can lapse into pity, self-pity, and frustration, and make choices that are unhealthy and unwholesome, do not glorify God, and do not bless those around us. We have no choice about the kinds of situations that we're in. Now, that's not to say that we sometimes are not our own worst enemy. A lot of the bad things that have happened to me in my life have been self-inflicted wounds, right? When I was a boy, I remember particularly one occasion, I don't know why this, of all the times that I hurt myself, I remember being on the street when I was growing up, part of the time we lived in town at least. I'm riding my bicycle and somebody got the bright idea. I won't go say who it was. It's probably me. There was one of those rubber dodgeballs, and we found out that you could run over that thing with your bicycle and jump up in the air. Some of you are saying, how stupid were you, Mark? About that stupid. Well, it was going real well for a while. And finally, I went up, and I came down wrong, and I caught my leg on the side of the metal pedals on my bicycle. Tore that thing open. It was just a bright, shiny, sorry, Kevin. Bright, shiny, those of you know Kevin know he loves this kind of stuff. Bright, shiny piece of bone showing about that big around. And I knew it was hurt, so I started walking home, and I was doing all right till I saw my mom's face. Her eyes got about that big, and I looked down, and I bawled. You know, I don't know how old I was, 20, 25. Anyway, 9 or 10 years old. And, I bear the scar from that self-inflicted wound to this day. A lot of things that happen in our lives that are bad, we created those bad things. But you know what? There are a lot of other reasons why things may go badly in our lives. Sometimes other people do things they ought not do, and we bear the consequences of that. We just live in a world which is possible of inflicting wounds. I mean, tornadoes come. Nobody caused that necessarily. It's just the system that God has put in place has a certain amount of violence built into it. Sensible people try to minimize the impact of that to themselves as much as possible. Sometimes they make good choices. Sometimes they make bad. There are a lot of reasons why you might find yourself in a bad situation. And much of that may well be beyond your control. And even if it's self-inflicted, at any given moment, it just is what it is. You got a decision to make about this moment, even if you caused it. Some of you guys are in life circumstances right now that you've made some choices and you are suffering some consequences of your own making. You still have a choice in this moment. You can't go back and undo some of the things you've done in the past, perhaps. But in this moment, whether you inflicted this wound on yourself or whether somebody else did it or whether this is just a function of how the world sometimes works, you've got a moment. It's before you. And you've got to make a decision. And what I want to spend a little time talking about for the next few minutes is how we can make the best of those bad situations. Now, by the way, I think it's really appropriate for us to make the best of good situations as well. And sometimes we don't maximize the impact and importance of those situations either. But today, let's think about making the best of a bad situation. And I want us to go to Philippians chapter 4. Now, Philippians is a great book. It's one of my personal favorites. The emphasis on joy in that book, despite the circumstances, is absolutely remarkable. You'll remember that at the time that Paul wrote this book, he himself was in jail. And so the amount of positivity that emerges from Paul's pen under those circumstances is astounding. I want us to take a look at these 11 verses near the end of Philippians chapter 2 as kind of comes back after having discussed a variety of different kinds of things and talks about his relationship with the Philippians and some of the kinds of things he's dealing with and lessons that he's learned as a result of that. In verse 10 he says, I rejoiced in the Lord greatly now that it now at length you've revived your concern for me. For you were indeed concerned for me, but you had no opportunity. Reading between the lines there, what Paul is talking about is fellowship, koinonia. Specifically, he's talking about financial support. And he says, I'm glad that you've been able to resume that. Now, if you're also reading between the lines here, you get an important lesson here in verse 10. What this means is there was a time that Paul was doing without. But what Paul does here is a great lesson for us in that he looks at what he has now instead of looking at what he doesn't have and what he didn't have. How much of our time has been wasted fruitlessly thinking about what was not instead of what is? Listen, I am sure that many of us in this room are suffering as a result of something we wish we had, but we don't. That's real. I don't want to pretend like that doesn't matter. It matters. However, it's also true that every single person in this room has some things that are available to our disposal. And we'll talk as the lesson goes on a little bit about what some of those kinds of things are and how we can appreciate those and maximize the value of those. But the first step has got to be transitioning our point of view, our perspective, from a focus on what isn't to a focus on what is. As long as we think about what's not, we're always going to be frustrated and heartbroken. Paul will not allow himself to live that world. So he acknowledges the fact that there was a time when the Philippians were not, and he gives them the benefit of the doubt here and says, you know, you were not able to at that time, but now you are, and I'm so grateful for that. He's going to mention a little bit later on that time and time again they came to his aid. Historically, giving out of their poverty. He even uses the Philippians as examples as he writes to people in other places and says, you know, those folks in Macedonia give out of their poverty. Here, the focus is on what he's got. In this moment, he is benefiting from the generosity. He wants to spend his time focusing on what he's got instead of what he does not have. You and I a decision about our mindset, about what we will choose to feature on our horizon. We look up, what do you see? Strange, isn't it? And ironic in a way, given the fact that we are people who tend to think rather concretely. Isn't it ironic that we tend to focus on that which is not there instead of that which is? When there's so much in our field of view. The little image that's on this slide right now. If you're looking at that slide, perhaps your eye tends to go to the right, which shows the bars, a lack of freedom that Paul has here. But I intentionally chose this image because if you look closely and if your eyesight's reasonably good, you can see there are a number of other things in the frame, things that Paul has. Have you ever thought about this? Despite the fact that Paul is incarcerated, I don't in any way want to make light of what must have been a horrific set of circumstances. I mean, there's not even a television in his room. Dank, musty, beatings and things like that we know he says in other places he has endured. These are all real and are part of his circumstances. But he's got the capacity to write this letter. So he's got access to writing materials. Sometimes he's even got access to a scribe, somebody who is in there or is able to visit and come in and help him to produce these works. There's so much. Look at the frame that is life. And instead of focusing on what's not in the picture, focus on what is. There are a lot of things in the picture with you. So let's take a look at some of the other kinds of things that Paul tells us as he works his way through this letter to the Philippians. He says, don't misunderstand, he said, and this reinforces what we just talked about. I'm not speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low. I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. It's those three words that I've highlighted. He uses them twice. I've highlighted the upper occasion of those. I have learned. Now, I've learned a lot in my life. I've forgotten an awful lot of that. But over the course of years, when I was working on a graduate degree, my son had just started school. He's like first or second grade. He came up one time. I could see the concern in his eyes. He said, "Dad, what grade are you in?" I think it terrified the poor little guy that he might be 40 years old and still going to school. But so I've learned a lot. I wish I could remember all the stuff that I've learned. But here, Paul's not talking about those kinds of things. He's not talking about facts, figures, even principles or ideas, applications. He's talking about learning from experience and even the bad times. You see, Paul knew something that we tend to forget, and that is good can indeed come from bad. Now, my guess is that many people in this room on a certain level, though we may not always appreciate it in particular moments. I'm a man of a certain age at this time, and so when I see young couples getting married, you know, and going off and starting on their own, I feel sorry for them if they have too much. Because think of all the opportunities to reflect on how bad they had it that they're going to miss. We get to be 45, 50 years old. We look back at our early marriage. We didn't have two nickels to rub together. You know, we ate dirt. We were glad to get it. But at the same time, you learn some things about determination and steadfastness and the ability to prioritize people over things. You learn that through those bad times. Wouldn't it be a shame if you missed that? I think perhaps in some respects, the worst thing that could ever happen to a person is for them to experience a lifetime of ease. God intends to use troublesome things to help us. In James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, we're told that we are to rejoice when we encounter various trials. Why? Because the testing of your faith produces endurance, and endurance, when it finishes its work, yields completeness and maturity. This coming from trials. Even Jesus, the Bible tells us, though he were a son, learned obedience by the things that he suffered. And that allowed him to be the Messiah that we needed and the Savior that we crave. Paul says, I know what it's like to do without. I know what it's like to deal with some very negative and undesirable situations, but I have learned, verse 11, to be content. Boy, if there's one lesson that all of us could use learning, perhaps more than any others, perhaps it is contentment. We're not talking about quiet resignation. I guess this is about as good as life ever going to get. I'm talking about happiness and joy in the context of a life that's real and not a fairy tale. Not expecting or desiring that somebody else is going to come in and make right everything that's wrong right now. Jesus never experienced that, and it would be the worst kind of strange and insane for us to expect that that will happen. Much better to want what you've got than to get what you want. We need to learn from those lean times, those bad times, the persecution, the trials, the challenges, the failures. All of those provide tremendous opportunity for us to grow into the people God has called us to be. Do not run from that. Learn from the bad times. Verse 15, Paul says, you Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me in giving and receiving except you. This is, in some respects, very similar to what we had on the first slide, except it's kind of reversed. Here, again, Paul is noting those things that he does have instead of focusing on the things he doesn't. He acknowledges the fact that the checks weren't rolling in. You know, he didn't have a list. You know, when Dana and I went to Slovakia, we had 13 churches and one individual providing support for us. We were well taken care of. not extravagantly, but we had plenty. We had 14 people and groups of people who were thinking about us and caring about meeting our needs and things like that. It was great. Paul got one. And part of the time, he doesn't have that one. So he's out there making tents. But he's not focusing on what he doesn't have. He's focusing on what he does have. As I know that I'm not in this by myself. If you're thinking about the Beatles right now, welcome to my age group. God has surrounded us with others who join us on our journey and help to meet our needs. Listen, I haven't gotten from a lot of the people who are important in my life, I haven't gotten much from them financially. Some I do. I mean, the people of this congregation provide some support for Doug and me and the work that we do here, and Josh and Perry and others. And so that's good. I appreciate that. Just got back from a mancation with three of my buddies. And those guys mean an awful lot to me, and they have given me a lot through the years, especially some of them that I've known for so long. And that's not been financial. Okay, maybe somebody bought me lunch one time, but what I'm talking about is those things that we've shared that have helped me to grow as a person, have met some of my emotional needs. I'm so glad. You've heard me say this before. My apologies for the repetition. Sorry, not sorry. I'm so glad that God did not call us to a religion, a lifestyle of spirituality that is individual. Instead, he has called us together into a caravan toward heaven. And we benefit from the mutual sharing that goes on in that. Paul was aware of that. And he thanked God, Philippians chapter 1 and verse 3, in his prayers for the Philippians and the impact that they had made on his life and the not only the financial support, but the encouragement in Christ that he received as a result of that relationship. When we're dealing with challenges, when things are not good, we do not need... Everybody's different. Some of you, when you get in a bind, you just want to circle in on yourself. You want to try to fix this on your own. And you want to try to just hunt. Others of you, immediately when there's a problem of any kind, you start looking around. Some of this is a personality matter, and I'm not going to tell you what kind of personality you have. I'm not even going to tell you you have to have a personality. I don't. But it's certainly the case, however, that we benefit from accessing the support systems that are in place around us. Don't cut yourself off from that. Though he is in a situation where it would have been very easy for him to hunker down and thought about himself in that circumstance, instead, he's very connected, accessing a resource that God has made available to him, others alongside him. Verses 17 and 18, Paul says, wait a minute, lest you think this is about the financial support. Let me clarify. It's not that I seek the gift, but I seek the fruit that increases to your credit. I have received full payment and more. I'm well supplied, having received from Epaphroditus the gifts you sent, a fragrant offering, a sacrifice acceptable and pleasing to God. What I think I see in Paul here is that he keeps things in perspective. It's good to have enough, to be well enough supplied so that you can do life. To have enough to eat, to have shelter, to have something to wear. Those things are important. Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6, refers to the fact that God knows that we need the... Everybody knows. The Gentiles know, the Jews know, God knows. Everybody knows that we need those things. However, those things cannot be prioritized to the degree that we deprioritize. Is that a word? Other things that are of greater value and importance are valuable, but they need to be kept in perspective. You need to remember what they mean. Hear what Paul does in this passage. He assigns value to their gift that is not financial. He says, what you are doing when you meet my needs is accruing credit from God as a result of your generosity. In other words, what you're doing when you give benefits you as much or more than it benefits me. That's keeping things in perspective. Ask yourself, of these things, what is their real value? better yet, maybe we ought to ask of the things that we have access to, whether they're relationships or whether they're actual physical or monetary things, what is the spiritual value of those things? How could they be used? How could I treat them with stewardship so that God can use them for spiritual purposes? What if everything we had we thought of in that way? Anytime you're shopping, what if you ask this question in addition to asking, can I afford it or how much space is left on my credit card? What if instead you ask, what is the spiritual, what's the potential spiritual value of that thing? How would that affect our shopping? Keep things in perspective. When Paul thought about the donations that the Philippians had made to his ministry, he thought about them spiritually, not just physically. Some of you thought, wait a minute, he skipped right by Philippians 4:13. It's the best known verse in the entire passage. He just breezed right by it. Well, I wanted to get us ready for it. I'm not sure if I successfully accomplished that, but that was my intention. In the midst of this section where he talks about the challenges that he's faced and the contentment he's experiencing despite that, he says, ultimately, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Now, this verse has made it into the popular culture to some degree. Found this cartoon when I was looking around. I can do all things that strengthen me. Tom, it's a pickle jar. Twist the lid, not the scriptures. Oh, for those of you who can't see it. Sometimes we try to use this passage to give us permission and access to power to do whatever we want. That's not what this verse is about. If you read that verse like that, you haven't read the rest of what we've talked about, much less listen to the things that I've talked about, said today. This is not about me being able to do anything I want. This is about me being able to work according to God's plan for him to accomplish his mission. See, there are an awful lot of things that Paul doesn't have, and there are things that Paul can't do. He protests, recorded in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, about this thorn in the flesh that he believes is preventing him from having the kind of impact that he wants. And God's response to that sounds like this verse. He says, my grace is sufficient for you. My strength, and you'll allow me a little liberty here, my strength is put on display during the times of your weakness. That's the New Revised Mark Blackwelder translation. Paul says from his point of view, I can do all things who strengthens me. God says from his point of view, my strength is made perfect in weakness. It's the same thing. Remember what God can do with you. Remember that he never fails in accomplishing his mission. I fail sometimes in accomplishing my mission, and I may fail in my part of accomplishing his, but he never fails in accomplishing his mission. We need to remember what God can do. When we take a look at our circumstances, and when we haven't been dealt the best hand as we might perceive it, our mistakes and the consequences of them, the deeds of others and the consequences of them, the natural set of circumstances that evolve as life continues by day to day, those things may not result in an ideal situation for us. It may be even a bad situation. But can we remember what God is up to in those times? And can we make ourselves available for his use in those moments? Can we look to the things that are present rather than the things that are absent? See the positives instead of the negatives and allow him to work mightily in our circumstances so that his grace is on public display for all to see. Paul closes this little section and essentially closes the book with this doxology. My God will supply every need of yours according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus. To our God, he exclaims, and Father, be glory forever and ever. Amen. God provides. And as Paul takes a look at himself right now in this circumstance, a circumstance which surely all of us would say is an intensely negative and undesirable situation, Paul sees God at work. And here, 2,000 years later, you and I read together the letter that was produced in this moment and are still challenged by Paul's view of what God was up to in his own life. And I challenge us today that we take a look at our situation like Paul took a look at his and ask, what might God be up to? What growth can take place? What ministry can be done? What impact can God have? What glory can He receive in this moment in my life? It may be that some of you right now are in a very, very unpleasant circumstance, dealing with some things that have just been heartbreaking, frustrating. You've been defeated. What can God do in your life at this moment? Do you need to come to Christ to see the benefits of a life lived as Paul lives his, modeled after Jesus himself? Do you need to come home so that God is again exerting influence in your life in a way that you've been unwilling to allow Him to exert it? Do you need brothers and sisters to gather around you? Remember, we're all in this together. Can we help? If there's anything you need to do in response to the invitation of Jesus, would you let us know by coming forward as we stand and sing together?